Hello. We should start. So welcome to Wising. I'm John Bloomfield, the assistant curator at Wising, and curator of this exhibition, More of an Avalanche. Thank you all for coming to Wising on this what's turning out to be quite a nice day. We're very lucky to have some really brilliant speakers today who are going to help us unpack and explore some of the themes of More of an Avalanche. I hope you've had a chance to look around and to see the work that we've really been excited about over the last 12 months. If not, there'll be some time during the break, and the exhibition doesn't actually finish until tomorrow afternoon, so if you wanted to spend the whole weekend at Wising, you would be more than welcome to do that. So I'm just going to say a few words about the exhibition before we begin. The first exhibition of the year at Wising traditionally presents work produced here over the previous 12 months. And one of the initial aims of this exhibition was to acknowledge that a lot of the work that goes on here is ephemeral, discursive, experimental, or still in development, and that an idea pursued in a formal symposium, a kitchen table discussion, or a brief moment during a DJ set could be as important as a material form. So I was very keen that the exhibition reflected the fact that the bedrock of Wising's program is really made up of these kinds of moments, residencies, retreats, events, and a music festival. So it's an exhibition that attempts to temporarily pin things down, to take a snapshot of something that's always moving. And so with that in mind, I'm really excited that today's event will close the exhibition by agitating things and getting them to move again, by unfixing things. As you may know, the thematic starting point of the show was to think about sensitivity and the political importance of that. And already with today's event, we're at a remove from that and ready to explore some diverse sub-themes such as intergenerational conversation, sickness and crip theory, anti-stimulation, and the dissolution of spaces for both critical conversation and club culture. So we'll begin by hearing from Nick Aikens, a curator at Eindhoven's Van Abbe Museum, co-curator of the fantastic The Places Here exhibition, some of you may have seen at Nottingham Contemporary, South London Gallery, or MIMA last year, and curator of a brilliant new retrospective of Rashid Olin. Nick and I will have a conversation in which I'll invite him to draw on this research to contextualize More of an Avalanche. This will be followed by a conversation between Raju Rage and Trishna Shah in the gallery. So we first saw a version of Raju's installation, Undervalued Energetic Economy, when Raju was in residence at Wising last year. And the work has been, I would say, absolutely central to the development of this exhibition. So we're really pleased that Raju can be here and can be joined by Trishna, one of the contributors to the interview portion of the work. And then following a short break, we will hear three presentations expanding on some of the exhibition's themes. Artist Leah Clements will talk about a newly forged network of art practitioners interested in issues around sickness and crip theory, who Leah has invited to be in residence at Wising later in the year. Leah has brought along a new virtual reality work that explores some of these ideas, Sickbed, that you are invited to explore during the break, so that's available at reception. And then current artist in residence, Phoebe Collins-James, will present research around a new work she is developing with last year's interesting Negro Jamila Johnson-Small. This new collaborative work will be embodied through a symbiotic relationship between dance, music, and sculpture, and will ask what an anti-assimilationist practice might look and sound like in 2018. Following that, we'll hear a presentation from Elijah, a DJ, producer, and co-founder of the label Butters, and current associate artistic director of the Lighthouse in Brighton. Elijah will be discussing Last Dance, a project he instigated that looks into the rapid changes affecting UK club culture. Finally, we'll have an open discussion, which Nick will chair, in which we'll get a chance to connect some of these disparate themes and hopefully to hear from you in the audience. So at this point, I just wanted to quickly mention that we've also been joined in the audience by two of the artists in the exhibition, Harold Offey, who you might recognise from the photo series in the gallery, and Zinzi Minot, who produced the fantastic Gunfingers and Opaque Bullets film in the Open Studio. So we may be lucky enough to hear from them as well. Okay, so just to formally introduce Nick, Nick Aikens has been a tutor at the Dutch Art Institute Art Praxis since 2013. He's currently a curator at the Van Abbe Museum. Recent and ongoing projects focused on the 1980s and specifically the UK Black Arts Movement, and a retrospective monograph on Rashid Areen. So the idea of this conversation is perhaps quite perverse. It's to introduce the themes of one exhibition by talking about a completely different project, but I guess the hope is that by revisiting Nick's research into the 1980s in the UK and the Black Arts Movement, we might be able to build up a bit of a historical context for what's happening in More of an Avalanche, and to look at this show with a longer historical lens, and to kind of maybe draw out some other questions. So, Nick, could you be able to start by saying some brief words about the two projects, the kind of overlapping research project?
Sure. So, firstly, thank you. Can you hear me? Thank you very much, John, and everyone at Wising for having me. It's lovely to be here on the last weekend of your show, and congratulations on the show. It's really wonderful to see, having seen the images. As you say, it's slightly strange, and one feels slightly uncomfortable coming into a moment where you're celebrating the end of your show and then to start talking about one's own projects, which happened elsewhere. But maybe it can serve to, as you say, pull out some threads and give a kind of longer lens. So maybe I'll begin with the Places Here exhibition, which was a show that began actually in another guise in Eindhoven, where I work, under the title Thinking Back, a Montage of Black Art in Britain. And that was part of a larger exhibition that looked at the 1980s from different perspectives across Europe. And the aim of that exhibition was to try and analyze or think about the importance of the 1980s for today. We were working with a number of partners, collaborators in different institutions in Europe, who for different at different moments had all arrived at the 1980s, all thought about the 1980s as this moment where this very important change takes place between how governments and state and civil society, the public, relate to one another. A really important shift seemed to take place in the 1980s, where governments and the state started to governments and the public started to mean different things to one another. And that could happen in the transition in Spain after the end of Franco's dictatorship. It can happen in the end of the disintegration of Yugoslavia, or it can happen in Thatcher's Britain. So this 1980s is this really important moment where we're living with the ramifications of that today. And within that, I, being British, wanted to think about the 1980s from the perspective of Britain. And of course, one begins with Thatcher when one thinks of the 1980s Britain. And so I started this research for the 1980s Britain, reading Stuart Hall's text around where he introduces the term Thatcherism. And from there, to cut a very long story short, I went on a journey to discover the group of artists, thinkers, filmmakers, activists who've become associated with this not unproblematic term, the Black Arts Movement, which none of the artists within associated with it would adhere to or conform to, but it allows us to group a sort of certain discussion together. And so within the show in Eindhoven, it was kind of set in context to these other European perspectives. I was then invited to develop that show in Nottingham Contemporary with the director Sam Thorne. And then it became a kind of standalone exhibition and a very different thing for many different reasons. A, you're not looking at it as this kind of polyphonic, to use your term, configuration, but you're looking at it as a standalone thing. It's in Nottingham in the Midlands, where many of these conversations between the artists happened. And of course, it's the most kind of, although there's been lots of work into this period in the 1980s and looking at black artists in Britain in the 1980s, it was the kind of most ambitious and largest coming together of some of these artists. So it becomes a whole different thing, a whole different enterprise and quite sort of loaded in a certain way. And one of the premises of the exhibition, both in in the Van Abbey and then in Nottingham and then in South London, was to think about this term montage when thinking about the 1980s. And to think about montage both as something that happens within many of the artists' work, so practices of collage, montage in filmmaking that's happening with the film collectives who are working in the 80s, but also to think about it as a curatorial device, as a way of working. How do you bring different elements together to create a snapshot of something in a particular moment? And how do you bring different histories together? How do you bring the 1980s together with the present moment? How do you think about this juncture, this constellation of different histories and moments? And of course, for the artists working in the 1980s, that was really important. How could they, how could Lubain Ahmed think about Toussaint Louverture and the first successful uprising in Haiti? How could she think about that in relation to Thatcher's Britain? You know, so this idea of montage of history kind of reforming in the present became a very important device within the show. And of course, this allowed me to say, okay, this is not about marking a beginning and an end of a movement. It's not about tracking a certain chronology. It's about bringing together a kind of conversation, bringing together these different elements, and to put them alongside one another, and to say, okay, this is not fixed. This is constantly in flux, constantly in movement. And so in Nottingham, we had over 40 artists, over 100 works, a series of archival presentations that were curated by people either working in the 80s or who have since formed archives, artists like Marlene Smith, Claudette Johnson, Keith Piper, who were working on the Black Art Group Research Project, Lubain Ahmed with her Making Histories Visible archive in Preston, June Giovanni, who has a film archive. So to bring those archives within to the show and to kind of really think about how histories are formed, how they're archived, and to also contextualize a lot of the material within the exhibition. So that exhibition was in its kind of largest guise, I guess, in Nottingham, and was then reconfigured in the South London Gallery later in the year, and also in Middlesbrough. And what the kind of, I think what was so interesting about having the opportunity to rethink those exhibitions is you could really stress the fact that with different combinations of works, different combinations of artists, different combinations of archival materials, different stories emerge, different histories can be told. And I think that was one of the most important things for me about the exhibition, is that we understand history, these histories, histories in toto, as very fluid, as things that are always changing depending where you're looking from, depending who's telling them, depending the context you're in. And I think it's something that is probably resonates with the exhibition here, both in terms of this idea of a polyphony, but also in terms of the kind of intergenerational perspectives that that the exhibition speaks to. So that may be a bit rambling, but that kind of hopefully gives some sense of the Places Here exhibition. Rashid's retrospective is more straightforward to talk about in a certain sense, because it was a quite a classic retrospective. Rashid Araïn, who's an artist who has been working for the past 60 years. Since 1964, he's been living in London. He was born just outside Karachi. He has been is a painter, sculptor, perhaps probably most well known as the founder and editor of Third Text Journal, a really vital contributor to post-colonial, anti-colonial theory in the 90s and 2000s. Rashid's retrospective came out of the 80s show. So when I was doing the 80s show, and Rashid was such an important figure for many of the artists working in the 80s. He was an older generation. He was invited to speak at the first National Black Art Convention in 82 in Wolverhampton. Of course, he curated the other story in 89. And I was realizing when researching the Places Here exhibition that Rashid, as an artist, as a thinker, as a figure, was everywhere. And then I started looking back at his work into the 70s, his performance work in the 70s, going back into the 60s, his minimalist sculptures, and even to his paintings in Karachi, and then going forward to more recent work, and realizing there was this extraordinary body of work and this extraordinary story of Rashid's that had never been told. And you know, as a curator working in a museum, this is gold dust. You're suddenly, okay, here's the story that needs to be told. This needs to be made public. And so with I went to see Rashid in his studio, and very quickly it said, okay, we need to make this retrospective. We need to make this chronological tracking of Rashid's contribution and Rashid's story. So the show is divided into five chapters, which roughly demarcate different periods in his life and his work. And we did a big monograph that went with it, which included kind of 500 works, to really make public this body of work, what it was, because there was bits and bobs here and there, but no one had put it on paper and say, okay, this is Rashid Areen, this is his work, and that's what's there. The show has just finished in Eindhoven, and it will tour to Geneva, to MAMCO in Geneva, and then it will come to the UK. It will be in Baltic in October, and then on to Moscow. So if you're in the north in October, please come and see it. There's my plug.
Thank you, Nick. So in that show, which is arranged chronologically, as you've said, we see an artist arriving in the UK and facing a form of institutional deflection. So there's a period, firstly, where Rashid Areen is rejected by various institutions, where he has trouble showing work, quite simply. And this is followed by attempts to both kind of change those institutions from within. So the kind of correspondence with, is it the Arts Council about organising the other story?
It's with the South Bank Centre. Yeah.
South Bank Centre. So, yeah. So to change those institutions from within, so organising the other story at the Hayward Gallery, but then also to build his own institutions with first Black Manifesto in the 1970s and then Vertex slightly later on. So I just wondered if, for a bit of context, you could sketch out the funding and institutional landscape as it was in those decades for Black, Asian and minority ethnic artists. So just quite simply, where would the opportunities have been?
Mm. So I'll talk about it from the perspective of Rashid, because there I'm on perhaps safer ground, okay, rather than pretending to be an expert on the minutiae of funding in the 70s. But Rashid writes to the South Bank Centre, to Andrew Dempsey, in 78, with the first idea to do a survey, a kind of intergenerational, again, survey of artists, diasporic artists working in Britain in the post-war period. And he suggests this show because there's just been in South Park Centre an exhibition of all women artists. And he says, this is an incredibly important moment for the South Bank Centre in Britain. Now is the time to do a show of Black artists in Britain and to analyse their kind of contribution towards modernism. He doesn't get a response for, I don't know, 6-7 months or so, and it takes 11 years before this exhibition is subsequently realised. Those 11 years in terms of funding possibilities mark a huge kind of seismic shift in the way places like the Arts Council, Greater London, Channel 4, all start making money available to working with Black artists, working with different community organizations. So I suppose in the 1970s you could say that there was no possibilities whatsoever, and Rashid's suggestion was as I say, it took 6 months even to get a response to say that this was not a possibility. By 1989, the other story takes place at the South Bank Centre. I mean, we can talk about what happens after that, actually, which I think is equally important. But through the 1980s, through the GLC, through BFI, there is a huge shift in terms of resources being being made available. How they're used, we can again talk about and discuss, but that's when the shift occurs in the 1980s.
Okay. So in that kind of initial period of frustration, using Rashid as a case study, where was he able to show or kind of have critical feedback about his work? Where would work have been shown and discussed?
In the case of Rashid, the only space really in the 70s was Artists for Democracy, and this formerly Signals, which was run by David Medella, where he was doing a really interesting program of international artists. This is where Rashid had his first solo show in the mid 70s, where he first did the performance Paki Bastard, Portrait of an Artist as a Black Person. And David Medella for Rashid was a really significant figure in terms of his kind of political and theoretical education in a way. Of course, when you come to the 80s and many of the artists working in the places here, they're doing a lot of self-organizing. So the shows are, they're curating the shows, they're organizing the shows, they're putting them on, firstly in, you know, kind of university spaces. They're organizing the convention, like self-organization, collective organization is key to the extraordinary energy that's happening at the beginning of the 80s. By mid-80s, you've got a lot of the galleries, interestingly, outside Europe. I saw on Raju's diagram, London-centric was a was a thing that came up. A lot of the activities happening outside London, you know, places like Blue Coat in Liverpool, in Sheffield. These institutions, and you go to some of the regional collections, they got amazing work from the 1980s because they were the ones paying attention, they were the ones buying it. So again, by the mid-80s, you've got this shift, and then of course, in 89, late 80s, you've got the Whitechapel Gallery show, From Two Worlds. You've got The Other Story in 89. Then it's kind of, you know, London wakes up and takes notice. But it took a long time for that to happen.
I mean, one of the things that's really, really striking, looking back at that, at the moment when funding starts to be kind of released for groups like Black Audio or Sankofa Film and Videos, just to think about the spaces where those works would be seen. In More of an Avalanche, there are two works by the Newsreel Collective, who were a group who worked with young people in the East End of London to make kind of educational issue-based films. So there's one that kind of really thinks about race and racism, Divide and Rule Never, and one, True Romance, etc., that thinks about sex, gender, and stereotypes. And one of the original members of the group, Paul Morrison, came to see the show, and I asked him, like, where would these films have been shown, and they were, because as they were educational, as you might expect, they were shown in schools, but also in all of these kind of spaces which have, like, disappeared now, so like youth clubs, community centres. Said it was quite common to have rooms made available by local council, and I mean, that's kind of maybe like in an educational context, but was that kind of, did you come across that kind of looking at kind of visual?
Yeah, I mean, I think also a lot of the film collectives, for example, Black Audio, Cheddar, Sankofa, they're organizing a lot of workshops, community-based workshops in terms of like how to make film, how to edit film, how to produce film, and a lot of these things, a lot of these things are happening on quite a low-key level. And you've got, that's made possible because in the instance of the film collectives, Channel 4 are giving long-term funding to these organizations, which is extraordinary. Imagine Channel 4 now giving like 2-3 year bursaries to a film collective, a young film collective. So part of that remit was to go out and do workshops, filmmaking workshops. And so, yeah, there was a lot of a lot of activity that was happening away from gallery spaces and away from institutional spaces.
That's quite interesting. That was a sort of stipulation of the funding that it would...
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, you give a context for the work as one where a generation of black artists are coming through art school and looking for images of black people in the media and art history, but are only presented with a very white European art history. So in this exhibition, More of an Avalanche, many of the artists have been able to look back and see work produced by the very generation that you've researched for those projects. There are kind of many examples of influence, even of direct conversation or pedagogical links between the two, and kind of intergenerational conversation sort of really emerges as a key theme in the show. But I was wondering, where ultimately did the generation you researched have to turn to find what they were looking for? I mean, you gave the example of Lubaina Himid looking back at kind of big history, looking at Toussaint Louverture.
Yeah, I mean, I think the story that I was mentioning, this was Claudette Johnson, who, and Marlene Smith talk about, a lot of the artists talking about going to their art teachers at art school, and, you know, saying, where are images of, in Claudette's case, where are images of black women? And art schools, art teachers saying quite simply, there aren't any, they're not there, and the black artists aren't there in terms of the art history. So this was like a kind of de facto inbuilt exclusion or amnesia or blindness that was there in art schools. You know, I think it's also really important to say that when we're talking about these artists, we're talking about many different positions, groups, so I would not want to kind of give some sort of homogenous overview. But you know, you've got for artists like Eddie Chambers working in the Black Art Group, they're looking very much at like what's happening in America and Pan-Africanism. They're looking at kind of much more radical thinkers. You've got the filmmakers who are really reliant on a lot of the film festivals coming in, like Third Eye Film Festival, looking at third cinema makers from Latin America, from West Coast America. So they're really having to look outside Britain, that's for sure, except maybe with the case of Rashid. And they're often looking to political activists, to theorists rather than artists.
Yeah, Stuart Hall in Birmingham and...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so one of the like, really crucial kind of keywords in More of an Avalanche is the word snowflake. So it's a term that relatively recently has begun to be used as a pejorative and to shut down complaints. So if you call someone a snowflake, you reduce their complaint to whining, on their vulnerability to oversensitivity, you tell them that they shouldn't be listened to. So that's the context in which one makes a complaint today. And so much of the work in this show almost anticipates being criticized for oversensitivity. I just wondered how that climate compares to the period you researched. I know there's a precedence in terms like the loony left or political correctness gone mad. But I wondered whether the artists you looked at needed to think about how their work might be received by an audience that would be unsympathetic in this way, or whether perhaps it wasn't really a concern at all.
I think it's probably more that it was that society in the 70s, certainly in the late 70s, was just more openly racist. You know, I think you know, Rashid talks about it in the late 60s, early 70s as, you know, saying racism was overt and it was legal. So the idea to be sort of called out for your position, you know, it hadn't got to that step yet even. It was just still at the stage of overt racism. So first it was about, you know, 1979 in Britain is the year that the most candidates from the National Front are fielded in elections. You know, this is a really, it's at the end of the Labour government, which has economically depressed the country. It's a really fractured, fraught moment in Britain. So racism is just everywhere. So it's I think it's quite a different context in that sense. So it's first and foremost, it's about having your voice heard, having your image seen. It's a question of visibility and audibility before it gets to anything near ideas of political correctness. You see what I mean? It's kind of there's still a long road to go.
I guess you kind of maybe see that transition in a work like That Rush, which Isaac Julian's That Rush, which is in the gallery, which looks at how, I guess, essentially how the right to talk to each other and how kind of racist tactics would have to be kind of hidden, camouflaged, how they become more sophisticated kind of when they go underground.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, I think seeing that work, which is what, like 93?
93.
Yeah. And it's so resonant today. No, you can imagine the very similar talk shows happening at the moment in the US.